Welcome to Nancy's Bookshelf, a program of conversation and readings with local and regional writers. Now, here's your host, Nancy Wigman.
In her award-winning book, Heal Your Mind, Rewire Your Brain, Nevada City author Pat Lynde Kyle says we can teach our old brain new tricks. That breakthroughs in the scientific understanding of how the brain works have shown us that our brain is constantly rewiring itself in response to events in our life. In her latest book, Pat Lynde Kyle explores a subject that is taboo in our culture, death. Embracing the End of Life, A Journey into Dying and Awakening is a handbook for living, since the fear of dying keeps many people from living fully. Pat Lynde Kyle, welcome.
Thank you so much, Nancy. Nice to be with you.
One reason I wanted to mention your previous book is that you approached it from a scientific point of view, and your new book is a departure from that. There are people who are going to say, well, Pat, what you're saying in this book is not at all scientific.
Well, that's probably true, but as you get deeper in the book, you'll find that I do get a little more scientific about our body and our brain and what happens when we die. So I brought it in, but this is a delicate subject, Nancy, as you know.
Well, in fact, you say in your book, I did not choose to write this book. Balto, how did you write a book that you didn't choose to write, Pat?
You mean, how did I get involved in it?
Yes.
What's triggered it?
Yes.
No, I had no idea I'd write such a book like this. It happened when I was, I think it was about 4 years ago, I went on a meditation retreat. But before I went, I had heat exhaustion. It was so hot in Nevada City, you wouldn't believe it. And I got in my car, it was 99 degrees. Of course, last year, 99 wasn't much. But the interesting thing is that I didn't really do anything to cool the car down. I just drove in that heat and got home and I was sick. I mean, I was really sick. And I figured out I had heat exhaustion. So I was leaving for Boston in 2 days, and they said, stay even. Do not get too hot or too cold, and you'll be fine. And I was. So I left on my trip, got off the plane, and it was the hottest they've ever had in Boston and New York. Humidity was horrible. By the time I got to the retreat center, it was awful. And by the time I got to my room, of course, it was very hot and humid. And then the next day when I went into the meditation center area, it was air conditioned. So I had the same quality of hot and too cold and too hot. And in a couple of days, I started feeling sick again. So that night when I went to sleep, it was, you know, a regular sleep, and I felt fine, except I was ill. I mean, I had upset stomach and a headache. Woke up at 2 in the morning, and I couldn't believe I was so frightened. I was terrified, and I couldn't figure it out. What happened? And so I did my yoga. I tried to meditate. But I was so, so terrified. So finally, I sat down on the bed and I said, okay, Pat, why are you so frightened? And the words came, I don't know where they came from, but a thought came, you're frightened to die. Now, Nancy, of course, I'm not the youngest thing in the world, but I never thought about death, really. I mean, everybody dies, and I know you hear about it in the news constantly, but I'm not going to die. So
we know logically that that's not true, but we don't function always on a logical basis. We function emotionally. And emotionally, you're telling yourself, I'm not going to die.
No, and you don't sit around thinking about I'm going to die either. Although there's a lot of, oh, you know, on the freeway and that car gets too close, you know, you feel it. But so I went back to the bed and I sat there and I said, well, you know, I guess if I'm going to die, I'm going to die because I'm way out in the boonies in Massachusetts, and there's certainly not even a motel in this little area. I didn't have a car. What? and everybody's asleep and the teachers are gone because it's a Sunday night. So I said, well, I guess I'm just going to die. So I laid back down in bed and I woke up the next morning feeling great. Come on. So happy. I had an appointment with a teacher that day already set up. So I went and talked with her and she said to me, Pat, you are very courageous. And I said, how could I be courageous? What else could I have done? And she said, will you face something that most people don't face, your own death? And I'll tell you, that few weeks that I was there, it changed my life immediately. It changed me from feeling kind of tight to just relaxed. And no matter what happens, I guess I'm going to be okay. There was a real trust that happened. And so the next few months, my husband had surgery, so I was very active with him. And then 2 months after that, I got I'm a meditator, you can tell, that I got a whole stream of ideas for this whole book. It was amazing. It wasn't like chapter one, you're going to talk about this, but it was a feeling of what was going to go into this book that I did not want to write.
You know what, to me, this seems like a download of information that was downloaded and it surprised you, but there it was.
That's right. You're exactly right. And that lasted for 3 years where I felt pushed to read every book, to talk to every person, to just contemplate on this. Something came through me to do this. But really what came through me was, how can I write this? And I always want to cry, for my family. So my family knows about how I want to be treated. So I know how they want to be treated. And so we come together as a family to support each other, which now I know is one of the most important moments in our life, our passing.
My guest is Pat Lynde Kyle, and her newest book is Embracing the End of Life, A Journey into Dying and Awakening. Early in your book, you say, let go of resistance to death. And from what you describe, that's what happened to you, that you let go of your resistance to death. And what do you mean by that advice, Pat?
Letting go of any tension around death changes the way you're going to die. It changes your mind so that you're not so scared. So we're really, really releasing a whole resistance of fear around our dying.
And you even say in your book, you refer to the gift of resistance. What do you mean by the gift of resistance?
The gift of resistance. I mean, you know, just notice in your life how much you tighten up about something. Oh, he didn't call, or gosh, I've got to get dinner done right now. So all that is really creating what I call a constricted self. And that
I might mention for listeners that as I'm watching you say that, your body tightened. You tightened your body because that's what we do. We encounter resistance. But I think for the most part, we're not aware of that. We're so busy caught up in that thought that we don't notice our bodies tightening up like you just demonstrated.
I think that's really true. But you know what I've learned, and I know for sure, is that we do not die in that constriction. We die in what I call an expansion. We die in a relaxation. We die in, you talked about my right brain, left brain book. We die really in our right brain. And our right brain is that expanded self, that creative self, that place you get to when you do yoga at the end, you know, we all lie down. And that's the quality of our body and our mind that we die in. Now, whoever told us this? I didn't know that. So there's a practice that we really need to do in order to prepare for our own death.
And you mention in your book that the ego, this constricted self, resists dying. I don't think it's conscious, Pat. Do you? That we resist
Well, I know
dying?
It's a taboo to talk about. When people would come up and they say, oh, you're writing another book. What's the name? So I'd say, well, Embracing End of Life. I could see the body tighten. People would hope. And then, guess what? They change the subject.
Yeah.
So it's maybe not on the tip of your tongue, but it's in our culture, big and strong, about we will not die. And this is really interesting. I was thinking back about my mother when she was a little girl. She lived on a farm in Colorado, and her grandparents, of course, lived with them. And so when they died, they died in the house. They didn't die in the hospital or on a machine of any kind. And then
and
they
on
were
a farm,
buried.
You see animals. You see the life cycle of animals that they die. And so you're just saying that when people lived on a farm, they lived with the older generation and they saw death that we're removed from.
That we're removed from. Absolutely. So they buried. My grandparents were buried right on the farm. Of course, this green burial is starting to come back, which I think is a real blessing.
Well, you mentioned that people say, well, Pat, what do you write? What's your book about? And you say death, and then they want to change the subject. And you have in your book...
So let's not tell our audience.
But you have in your book 5 reactions to death, and I guess somebody might experience all 5 of them, or some of them, or maybe none of them. And so what are some of these reactions that people have to death?
And all these reactions are resistances. And usually someone will deny, no, I may have this infection, but I'm not going to die.
So you know, that's the first one you mentioned is denial.
Denial. Mm-hmm.
And then what are some of the other reactions to death?
Another one is getting really angry. What is my body doing to me?
I've always been able to rely on my body, and now it's abandoning me. It's
right. It does feel like you're
betraying me.
Betraying me.
Yeah.
Yeah. But what we know is that the body will die. We know it from the get-go. We're born with this body, and then we leave our body. We've known it for years, but we forget. We don't want it to happen. So it's anger. So denial is one. Anger is another. And then bargaining is another. And give me another pill that's new on the market. I'm sure this will work. Give me another surgery, even though I'm 88. And I'm sure this will work. So it's a bargaining that we go through. I mean, it's subjected by fear. And then the other one that really is hard is depression. People are depressed. They feel powerless.
Yeah.
And I think it's important to know that you can go through these things. It's almost natural.
I can just imagine a doctor says to the patient, you have less than 6 months to live. And I think it would be hard not to go in a spiral of depression, Pat.
Yeah.
It seems like a very natural.
If you haven't really prepared yourself to die, you know, we prepare to have babies. You're preparing for a trip. We prepare for a musical. Maybe we're singing. We're preparing and practicing all the time. We don't prepare for our death. And when my agent took my book, he said, I'm taking your book because there's no book out there like this. And I didn't write this because there's no book out there like I mean, I wrote it for our kids, you know, my family.
Yeah.
And friends. But isn't that interesting? There's no book out there like this that really prepares you, lets you know ahead of time what may happen. Because I think part of this is just we're scared of the unknown. What's going to happen to us?
And that could be true whether it's deaf or whatever it is where that is unknown, that we have a certain degree of fear, apprehension about the unknown.
That's right. So I talked to a friend yesterday that's taking this incredible trip to Japan, and she's so scared. You know,
and yet some people would say, boy, turn me loose in Japan.
Right. Japan. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. So, but she's never done that before, and she doesn't know what to expect, and she doesn't know about the airplane and so forth and so on.
So we have denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and I think I'm missing
despair.
And the last one you mentioned is despair.
Despair.
That
no
too is understandable.
Hope. No hope. There is no hope for me. I have this life. And now it's going to go away, you see. So part of the resistance is what is, I need to learn now how to let go.
You're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm Nancy Wiegman. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Pat Lynn Kyle. I'm Nancy Wiegman, and you're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. Well, you know, I feel sympathy for doctors who, how do I tell this patient there is no hope? Because they don't want to do that. They don't want to create despair in the patient. And yet, if I'm the patient, I want my doctor to tell me the truth and be realistic. So any decisions I make are based on reality. And yet, I can understand how physicians don't want to engender hopelessness in their patient. So that despair, I think, would be a tough one.
I do too, because they're trained to keep us alive.
Yes.
I mean, that is their training. So I was on the plane recently, and I sat next to this very young woman. So I started asking her what she did. She says, oh, I'm a nurse, and I work with children that have brain cancer. I said, wow. Do you ever talk to them about a possibility, or to the parents, about a possibility of this child dying? And she says, you know, we never had a class on dying. And she was young. I mean, it's hard to judge people these days, but I knew she was very young. And just recently out of school, they don't teach that they may die.
So even in our training programs for the medical profession, we avoid that subject.
That's right. That's right. So I really feel sorry for our community that just have no idea and go through incredible burdens. We carry death like a pack on our back, not even conscious that it's driving us. Oh, don't do that. Don't go out in the street. Don't you remember when you were little? Watch out for the car, you know, and it immediately puts fear in us.
Well, and you say in your book that fear is really what's behind these reactions like denial and anger, that denial is a mask for fear, that we don't really realize we're actually just afraid. And so we deny or we get angry because of that fear.
And isn't that nice to know? Wouldn't that be nice for people to know that that may be their reaction? They're not going crazy. That this is a natural process for us, especially in a community that denies that we're going to die.
My guest is Pat Lynn Kyle. She has written a book, Embracing the End of Life, A Journey into Dying and Awakening. And a lot of times when people reach this point in their life, you quote a father, what have I done in my life that was worthwhile?
That touched my heart.
Oh, doesn't it? Oh, my
When
gosh.
He was dying. And you know, that really, what my understanding is, that that's really asked of us. What's the meaning in your life? So if people know now that they really need to do whatever they're to do to create their meaning, their worthwhile in our life, that's an important piece that we leave here with. What have I done that's worthwhile? What's meaningful that I've done?
What you say in your book, what is meaningful in your life today? And I think a lot of times people say, well, I'm unhappy with this situation, but next year or 2 years from now, I'll change things. And you encourage us to examine what is meaningful in my life today.
Yes.
And I think that would, if we really consider that, we'd rearrange our priorities.
I think so, too. That's really interesting you say that, because I recently had a three-month course where I took people through my book, and we talked about that, because there's questions and there's all kinds of lists of things to meditate about in my book. It's not just a reading. It's really for you to contemplate and to understand yourself. So when you're working with a group of people like I did, they could hear what the other person said and they could get enthused about it, or they could say, oh gosh, I've got to do that. It was really beneficial for this group. And when we finished the course, I asked them, what did you learn? And they said, I'm not scared to die. That, to me, you know, I think there'll always be some fear when it's going to be painful. You get your body becomes acidic and so forth. But you know, on one hand, that this is a natural process that we all go through.
Our head knows that, but our emotions that I think need the convincing. You say in your book, you quote somebody, dying is not the end of your life. Now, that sentence by itself, I mean, I have a dear friend who's an atheist, and dying is not the end of your life, and he's going to say, well, certainly it's the end of my life. When I'm dead, I'm dead. That's the end of it. And you say, no, death is a doorway.
You know, it is a doorway. If you really, if this scientific person that you know, if you look at an atom, for example, it's almost all air. Or emptiness.
Space.
Or space. Mm-hmm. And that's what's built upon to create a molecule and tissues and organs and so forth. So that when you look at that space, it's full of energy and it's full of information. We are a body of energy. Energy does not die. I cannot say what's going to happen when the body goes, but I do say that there is energy that continues. And people that have died, quote unquote, and come back to life say all kinds of things. You know, like they saw people they knew, and there was incredible energy of love. The frequency changes to love, not hate, not fear, not all the things we go through here.
When I knew I was going to be interviewing you, I asked a couple of friends, if you were going to be able to talk to somebody who had studied this subject of death, what question would you have for this author?
Ooh.
And what do you suppose? They both had a similar question. And do you know what their question was about? Well, what they wanted to know is, well, what happens after I die? That's what they wanted to know. One person said that just that way. What happens after physical death? And the other one says, well, is there scientific evidence? I mean, here's a scientist speaking. I want some scientific evidence that of what happens after death. I'm just not going to take somebody's opinion. So how, in your book, you assume that that life continues after you talk about death as a doorway. Do you get people saying, well, Pat, I just can't go along with that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. People all have their own belief systems. Each of our religions talk about it in a different way as well. I think for me, when I began to study this, and who knows, I mean, I haven't died yet, but that we die in a gamma brainwave. gamma brainwave is the highest brainwave. It's enlightenment, according to the Buddhists.
May I interrupt to say that if people are interested in the brainwaves, they should read your first book, your previous book, because you go into brainwaves in quite detail in your
first
book.
I do. So that when my understanding now at the University of Michigan has studied this, that when the heart stops, that the brainwave of gamma continues for about, well, they say 20 minutes, but who, you know, you have no idea how long that is. What happens then? Who knows? Every religion has their own idea. But somehow the energy continues after the heart has totally stopped.
In fact, the one friend phrased it that way. What happens after physical death? And that's what you're just describing.
So my advice, and advice of many people, is when someone dies, that you don't touch them for a while and just let whatever the process is that's going on is going on, even if you don't believe it. And then not to move the body that has just died for at least 20 minutes. So it's all whatever is going on, it just allow it to go. Because, I mean, we don't know everything. Yeah. And more the green at the people that are doing green funerals now are keeping the bodies for 3 days and doing ceremony in homes. You know, they used to call it the parlor.
Yes.
And the parlor is when they held ceremony for people that had died in their parlor.
In fact, my grandmother was in her casket in the parlor. We didn't call it the parlor, the living room, in my aunt's house. And
great.
This was, of course, many years ago, but there she was. And that was the only time I'd seen. I was just a second grader at the time. And I got to see my grandmother there stretched out in the parlor.
I wonder what that did to your belief about dying, to have that experience. That's pretty rare these days, you know.
Oh, yeah. This, like I said, this was some time ago, and I don't know that it happens at all anymore.
It's coming back a little more. There's some movies out. If they, people go to my website, I've got them listed on my website, and some YouTubes.
You quote Henry Miller in your book, "Of course you don't die." And I think some people would say, what? Henry Miller is saying, of course you don't die. Well, of course you do. And this is in chapter 6 of your book, Pat. And the title of this chapter, you say step 3, is letting go into transcendence. And this is where you quote Henry Miller. Of course you don't die. Nobody dies. Death doesn't exist. You only reach a new level of vision, a new realm of consciousness, a new unknown world. You call this chapter, letting go into transcendence. Now, what in the heck do you mean, Pat? What is transcendence?
So let me just read the first part there.
You.
It's this description of letting go into transcendence is a digestion of many traditions that I've read and some inner experiences that I've had. Death is a slow motion process of letting go. It can be a graceful exit from a life path you traveled. It is to be hoped with good will and contribution. That's what getting back to a meaningful life. If you choose to let go of your constricted self, I mentioned constricted being tense self. If you let go of that now and die before you die, it will be an easeful transition over the threshold of death. It's been said over and over and over again, the more you let go and the more you accept that this is a natural process, that dying will be so much easier, less pain, and more open to accept what's ever going to accept. My husband and I were driving here today, and I thought to myself, you know, I'm really curious about this process. Why am I pushing it away? there's a curiosity. What's really going to happen next to me?
Yeah. Just like those friends, I said, what would you ask somebody who's written a book on death and dying? And there is this huge curiosity about what happens after we die. Mm-hmm. And it's also so unknown because people who say, well, nobody's come back to tell us. I think they discount these near-death experiences that people recount, even when it's somebody like a doctor who says, this is what happened to me. And this is hard for people to accept.
It is. It's almost like a covering. So in the latter part of my book, I talk about how do we cover this quality of mind that resists. I resist the part of when you die in love. You die in love. That's what enlightenment is. Enlightenment, as the Buddhists talk about, is being, is kind and compassion and love and peaceful. That's what we die in. Why are we so frightened of this?
I might remind people that the subtitle of your book is A Journey into Dying and Awakening.
I put that there because we can stay in this fear and this quality of resistance and miss the chance to begin to open to the quality of mind of love and caring and sharing rather than anger and fear and greed. And when we do that, we begin to what I call awakening or opening to ourselves rather than pushing ourselves back. And we have that opportunity. You know, isn't that exciting, Nan? We have that opportunity every moment.
Well, when you mentioned love, I was amused by somebody whose family member, whose husband died. She went to a medium after he died, and the medium says, okay, yeah, your husband's here, and he's standing next to your dad. And she said, what? They didn't even speak to each other in life. And she says, yeah, but they both loved you. And so love overcame this resistances these two people had in life, according to the report of the medium who was doing a reading.
That's a great story. That is great. That's true. Love actually is a stronger energy, a more powerful energy than fear. So I have a whole second part of my book saying, how did you create so much fear in your life? Step by step, how did you create? So I ask you questions. I have meditations on a Vimeo or a video that's in my website. And so that you can go through this and see, well, how did I get so frightened? And then the next part is, oh, how do I get more expanded, less contracted? And how then? And then my last video is taking you to gamma, what we die in.
The brain waves.
Yeah. I use it every day. Yeah. Why not?
You're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm Nancy Wiegman. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Pat Lynn Kyle. I'm Nancy Wiegman, and you're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'd like to go back to this Buddhist tradition. You mentioned Buddhism earlier,
yeah.
And I have a lot of respect for the Buddhist tradition. But there was one thing that I would question, Pat. This giving up of attachment, for example, giving up fears, that makes absolute sense for me. But and if I understand this correctly, give up attachments to family and friends. And maybe it's the word attachment, because I still feel attachment to friends, family that I have now. I don't think that's going to end when they die. I think I'll still feel a connection, an attachment. So,
you have to describe attachment.
Yeah.
I mean, you can love them but not be attached to them. For example, this is just came up today, but we have friends who have twins that both went away to college, came home at Christmas, and the boy said to them, "Mom, I'm grown up now. You don't have to tell me what to do." So she was attached, you know, brush your teeth, or you got to sit down now and wash your hands. Look at
that. I can understand. And the fact that you've probably heard Khalil Gibran saying, "Your children are not your children."
Yes.
So you give up the attachment to them.
Mm-hmm. And control. Really, what attachment is I want to control the way I want them to be for me. So it's letting go and accepting. It's really the word is letting go to acceptance of the way they are. It doesn't stop your loving them and caring for them. But, gosh, why did she say that? That's a little judgmental, you know, rather than just accepting that's how she is. And that takes the stress out. What we're talking about, what are the thoughts that you have that create tension in your body? That's what we're releasing, not love.
My guest is Pat Lindkyle. She's a Nevada City author, therapist, teacher, consultant, speaker. And her latest book is Embracing the End of Life, A Journey into Dying and Awakening. Eckhart Tolle is a popular, I don't know if I want to call him guru, but you mm-hmm. quote him in your book as saying, to die before you die. What is he trying to tell us when he says, die before you die?
He's saying, let's face that we're going to die. Let's face it. And let's face our understanding of how this goes so that we can let the fear of dying go before we die. It's letting go of the fear before we die, because we do not die into fear. You're going to have to, you know a lot of people that, my gosh, you know, she's skin and bones and she's been on that bed for weeks and weeks and weeks. A lot of it has to do, I need to forgive. I need to forgive. And what forgiveness is, I have a whole section in my book about that.
I might mention that you do have exercises in your book, practical things that people can do. And one of them are these, I don't know if you'd call them affirmations, but you give a choice of sentences that people can repeat for themselves.
Mm-hmm. And the forgiveness is the same way. My understanding is what the Buddhist is also saying, and what he is saying as well, is that we have this world out here, and as we forgive, we're less attached to the way the world is going. I mean, right now, it's a drama out there, as you know, politically. But how can we stay more in our heart here inside and let the world do what it's going to do? That's what he's saying.
Well, behind all of this that you're saying, too, and how you go about making these changes that are difficult, you suggest having a spiritual practice. And you mentioned your own. You went to a retreat in Massachusetts that was changing, life-changing for you. So why do you tell people we should have a spiritual practice?
Well, I say to people that you don't have to do meditation the way I do, but there are plenty other ways. I think yoga is a training of the mind. I think Qigong and to do mantras, because what it does is it takes you inward. And inward is that space that you die in. So if you have a practice of the training of the mind so that your mind is being trained toward the positive rather than the negative, and then that you're used to allowing yourself to move inward, then dying is going to be a natural process because you've prepared your mind for it.
Well, you mentioned that the spiritual practice can lead to stability of mind. And I'm not very often say to myself, now that person has a stable mind. But I more often notice somebody whose life seems to be chaotic, and I assume their mind is equally chaotic. And you say that that's one of the reasons to have a spiritual practice. It can lead to stability of mind.
It can. It can. Well, what's happened to me with my meditation practice is I can see or feel, somehow I see it, a thought coming up. You know, it could be, God, my husband didn't do, you know. But if I see it, and then I go back to my breath or go back to my heart or whatever, that means my mind then doesn't get caught in that, oh, isn't that awful, to back in and being in calmness. So that stability that you see, thoughts will come up and feelings will, I imagine when we die, it will come up. But if you have a place, I call it a reference point. So our reference point out here could be our computers. But if you have an inner reference point, that will stabilize your mind. You're not going to get it out here, trust me. The traffic and the, woo.
In fact, I'm sure you're familiar with the phrase still point, that this swirling, but in the center of this swirling is a still point. And that sounds like what you're
saying.
And
that's a reference point that I'm talking about. And that's what the second part of the book is teaching, is how do you find your reference point? How did you get off, and how can you get on? Yeah.
My guest is Pat Lind-Kyle, and she's an author, therapist, teacher, consultant, and speaker. Her latest book is Embracing the End of Life, A Journey into Dying and Awakening. And you've referred to energy in your book. And I think nowadays people are more aware of the energy body that consists of these energy centers called chakras.
Yes.
And why do you cover chakras in your book, Pat?
I think chakras are very important. They represent in different parts of your body areas where you can have difficulty in particular areas. So the lower chakra would be maybe your legs. If you have a problem with your knees or something, it's probably because that first chakra in the very part of the body needs to be energized. You see, when we have negative thoughts and when we have that constricted self, our energy reduces and we get sick. But if we move up to the moving up toward our heart, which is a heart chakra or a heart energy, it begins to build our energy. So I use that as a way of having a conversation for people to see how important energy is in our day-to-day. So if I'm upset with my husband all the time, I could get the flu at this time of year because my energy will go down and I'm more, my immune system is not as strong. So I think the chakra, teaching of the chakras, as we teach in yoga and different things, is really important to understand, to have a sense of.
Well, I happen to have been in China watching this woman get an acupuncture treatment, and the doctor says, do you feel the qi, this energy? And she replied, like, yeah, this is a normal question. And I try to imagine a Western doctor asking his patient, do you feel the qi? And the patient would be nonplussed, I'm sure. Well, what in the world are you talking about, doc?
Right. So we've so learned to stay outside ourselves. What about inside? There's a whole world inside that we're not trained or we're not encouraged. Or I think more and more we're being encouraged with mindfulness in the schools and so forth. But everything is so powerful out here and colorful and exciting. And
well, sometimes when people say, I don't have a clue about the energy system and these chakras, I have no clue. And I say, well, what about when you see a cute little puppy, you see a baby, don't you feel somewhere in your body? And usually that's, yeah, I feel in my heart. In fact, I had a little dog that was cute, and I remember somebody walking by and saying, oh, a little heart warmer. And I thought, yeah, that's it. You feel it, some, it could be a warmth there. So this energy system for me is real because I can feel, like, see a puppy, and I can feel that in the center of my chest. There's a feeling there. We have expressions like a gut feeling. Or if I'm hiking near the edge of a cliff and my first chakra goes, like, don't step too close to the edge because your survival depends on your staying on this path.
You don't want to break your leg.
Yeah. So I think if people were to be open, perhaps they read your book and say, maybe she's got something here. Maybe I'll be more pay more attention.
And I have an exercise in the book that you've probably done. It's just rubbing your hands together and feeling the heat, and then maybe put it on your eyes, and you can feel that energy going into your eyes. I mean, we're all energy, covered with this incredible body. I mean, it's a miracle, really. But we're all energy, just like you say.
My guest is Pat Lind-Kyle. Her book, Embracing the End of Life, A Journey into Awakening. And you quote an author of a book called Preparing to Die, one of the best ways to prepare for death is to acknowledge that we really are going to die. And you make that point that we don't want to acknowledge that, Pat.
You know, Bhutan, the country of Bhutan, they acknowledge they're going to die 7 times a day. That's an instruction they're given. And they say that it's the happiest nation in the world.
I have heard that, yes.
Is that amazing? Yeah.
And yet, from our point of view, you think, well, gosh, what a pessimistic thing to do, to be thinking about death all day long. But for them, it's not.
For them, it's not. It's a truth. It's the very truth.
Well, you say that you wrote this book to create community. And why do you say that, Pat?
I feel so strong. I really feel strongly about this, that most of us die unsupported, unloved, and probably a lot of us, I mean, they say something like almost 70% of us die in the emergency room or in ICU. And if you have a group of people that you've had conversations with about your fears, like when we talk to our daughter, she's so frightened to leave her son, but we support her as a family, and we know her real fear about that and pain about that, that we can be a community of love that so many people do not have. So in your, a lot of people have women's group and men's group and church groups and couples groups. I mean, just take the book and open it up, and there are questions right there and examples right there that you can, you, I don't even have to make them up. I've made them up for you so that you can begin to have a deeper experience with your friends, as well as having a community of people that will support you when you die.
Well, one way I became aware of this was that after my husband died, there were people who said, well, Nancy, you need to take care of things legally, legal documents, and I didn't want to do that, and I put it off. But then I did prepare these legal documents, a will, a living trust, and it was actually much easier than I thought it would be. And you have advice, practical advice in your book, not just advice emotionally, how to cope with this, but you also encourage people to prepare legal documents before we die.
Absolutely. My understanding is when you die and things are not in order, somehow it creates a lot of tension in you before you die. There's kind of a crisis around you because people don't know what to do. So in my book, I do have legalities there and what to do and websites to go to and that kind of thing. But recently, there is an advance directive that we have that you take your advance directive to the hospital, to the records area, and to people that are will manage your estate. But this is on the website. It's called mydirectives.com. And they'll have all kinds of questions that you will never have thought about if you're not medically oriented. how you want to be treated. Do you want to be intubated? Well, what in the world does that mean? Well, they'll explain it to you. How do you want to be treated at the emergency center? Do you want to have blood tests and so forth? Well, for me at my age, I would say, no, thank you. But at my son's age, he probably would say yes. So it's also, it comes on an app so that if, in fact, you go to the ER center on your own or with someone, a neighbor or something, you have all that information on your iPhone or your super phone.
Yeah, because I would say, well, I've told people close to me, don't intervene or what I would prefer. But you're just saying, suppose it's an emergency, I go to the hospital and I don't have that person or the people who know what I want, that it's good to have this in writing.
Oh my goodness, yes. The other thing that I have is a whole chapter on caregivers. How do you want to be treated when you're in the process of dying? Do you want people to hold your hand or rub your feet, or do you want music?
And because you say hearing is still viable. That's a sense that we keep longest. And so if you have music you want played or what you want the atmosphere to be, that's important because the dying person can still hear. You might not think they can.
Yes, that you don't think they can. And you might play the music you like, but it might not be soothing to them. And I also have different phases of the dying process. So in different phases, you treat the patient a different way.
And one reason I wanted to get all these legal documents in order is I didn't want to subject my family to this quandary and this legal quagmire that could be easily remedied. And so thank you, Pat, for including this practical advice in your book and all sorts of exercises that people can do. It's been a pleasure talking to you about your new book. My guest has been Pat Lynn Kyle, and her book is Embracing the End of Life, A Journey into Dying and Awakening. For more information on the topic of today's show, there are several opportunities in Chico. On Sunday, March 25th at 5:30 at the Chico Branch Library, there is a workshop on green burial. And then on Sunday, April 22nd, also at the Chico Library, a presentation for your consideration on death. Is having a funeral important? Why or why not? That will be on Sunday, April 22nd at 5:30. And then the Death Cafe will have their next meeting Saturday, April 14th at the Blackbird Cafe on Park Avenue. You can find this and other episodes of Nancy's Bookshelf on our website, mynspr.org. I'm Nancy Wigman.
You've been listening to Nancy's Bookshelf. Our theme music is The Mysterious Barricades by Francois Couperin, performed by Warren Haskell. Nancy's Bookshelf is a production of North State Public Radio.